Broadcasting from the Business Radio X studio in Alpharetta, it's time for Profit Sense with Bill McDermott.
Good morning. Welcome to Profit Sense. This podcast dives into the stories behind some of Atlanta's successful businesses and business owners and the professionals that advise them. We help local business leaders get the word out about the important work they're doing to serve their market, their community, and their profession, as well as discuss current issues that business owners are facing today across a wide variety of industries. I'm your host, Bill McDermott, and this show is presented by The Profitability Coach. When business owners want to increase their profitability, they don't often have the expertise to know where to start or what to do. I leverage my knowledge and relationships from 32 years as a banker to identify the hurdles getting in the way and create a plan to deliver profitability they never thought possible. We have three great guests on the show today. Mark Beal with Instead of Flowers. Mark, welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And we have Peter Fazer. Peter is a new profitability coach here at The Profitability Coach. Peter, welcome.
Good morning, Bill. Thank you for having me.
And Andrew Henry with Child's Company, doing wealth planning and wealth management. Andrew, welcome to Profit Sense.
Thanks, Bill. My pleasure to be here.
Mark, I'm going to start with you. I love Instead of Flowers. I tell everybody about it. Love the company, love the food. And so I just want to hear a little bit from you. How do companies think about corporate gifting in today's time and business landscape?
That's a great question. Corporate gifting is a really hot topic, especially as there's such a limited talent pool that's out there, and everybody's vying for the best talent that they can possibly attain, and more importantly, retain. And so if you think about what companies do across the spectrum, some might just call it a benefits package and what all goes into that. Sure. It's compensation. We've all become accustomed to other things like a 401k, health benefits, health coverage, but companies are exceedingly taking that a step further and a step further. One, I was talking with someone the other day dealing with some infertility challenges, and their company actually has a policy around that. It's just, that's mind blowing, but that's the level that companies and great companies want to go to take care of their employees. And so we fit into that landscape with corporate gifting with Instead of Flowers. We provide gourmet meals that are made fresh in our kitchen, made by chefs every single day, and then delivered to your doorstep. And why that's important is because it's a meaningful gift. It's a meaningful gesture that you are providing to your employees. And it's just one example of it. We work with a lot of companies, from healthcare systems to Fortune 100 companies to financial advisors and realtors and everyone in between. And they all have this one thing in common. It's about building a relationship with someone and doing something meaningful for them.
Yeah, what a great idea. And of course, I have my own story. We have a common acquaintance where they sent me a meal, which was absolutely delicious. I love the lasagna. And even further, I have shared that. So not only corporate gifting, but actually individual gifting as well. So I know it is hard to find talent in this day and time. We're approaching full employment. But how do you see companies maybe using Instead of Flowers as a natural extension of their employee benefits? Is there maybe a particular story that comes to mind?
There's a fun one that we've actually just recently been working on. An existing corporate customer, they're in the insurance world, and they've ordered from us here and there as needed. And we love that because we know that we're not going to be an everyday solution for everybody, but we are largely occasion driven. What I mean by that is somebody has a new birthday, or excuse me, a new baby, they're celebrating a birthday, get well soon, a death in the family, all of these life events that are constantly happening. Our insurance client wanted to put together a maternity and paternity leave package, actually. So instead of just one meal here, one meal there, we worked with them to structure something that was unique to their needs that we knew we could provide a really white glove service for them, but more importantly, for their employee who's out on leave for 8 weeks. And it was a fun one. You know, initially she came to us and said, hey, I want to give two meals a week for the 8 weeks that they're out. I said, okay, we can start with that. But as we dug deeper and asked some questions, what was really important to her, the gift giver in the company, was that they were doing something and it was a great gesture ongoing. She didn't necessarily care that it was two meals every single week. She just wanted that employee to be taken care of while they were out. And so we put together something that, again, was specific to them to say, hey, once we get this from you on the front end, we're going to take care of the rest of it. And we're going to ensure that employee gets fed. There's sleepless nights. They're dealing with a new baby. They don't know which way is up. There's that mom brain that people talk about. But the one thing we can assure you is that your gift to them will get used and it'll be appreciated.
Yeah, what a great idea. We're talking this morning with Mark Beal, who's the CEO and co-owner of Instead of Flowers. He leads the company in its 25th year, working to grow an established and respected company to serve more households and new markets. Mark started as a customer of Instead of Flowers, having gifted gourmet meals countless times as a financial advisor, and he brings that level of service and relationships to the company and its team. Mark, talk a little bit about what makes corporate gifting efforts successful. What challenges do you have to overcome?
I think one of the initial challenges when it comes to corporate gifting is it's sometimes entered into from a standpoint of, let me get in front of that person, the employee, maybe a client, maybe a vendor partner, whoever it may be. I want to get in front of them. And the natural inclination might be to put my logo in front of them, right? I'm going to give them something that theoretically reminds them of me each time they see it. And that can work and work well. We did custom engraved Stanley cups, all the rage right now. Uh-huh. And I've got a great partner who helped put those together. And they were a wonderful gift. But to get back to your question, what makes it successful is really thinking of gifting from their standpoint. What could they benefit from? What could they get the most use out of? That's what will make the most impact and ultimately leave the lasting impression. And so when we think of our gourmet meals, we're really giving the gift of time around the table. And that person doesn't have to think about what they're going to eat or go grocery shopping or cook it or do the dishes. It's just the time around the table that they get to enjoy each other's company, perhaps a happy occasion, perhaps a challenging one, but you're doing it for them. And although your logo might not be right there on it, you can rest assured that they're going to remember that. And that's the thing that will keep you at the forefront of their mind.
What I'm hearing you say is, instead of making it about yourself, you're making it about the people that you are giving the gift to.
Isn't that what gifting is all about?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
At Christmas time, you're not going to give somebody what you want. You're going to be thinking of them and what would they want.
Yeah.
The same should apply when it comes to this idea of corporate gifting.
Yeah. And not only during the Christmas holiday season, but I think Valentine's Day season is also a big time. And you just came through that. What's the next big holiday that you find a lot of either corporate gifting or individual gifting that goes on?
Yeah, Valentine's Day is our busiest day of the year.
Wow.
For sure. And we had a great Valentine's Day this year in terms of the number of meals that were delivered. And it's an all hands on deck effort, truly, for days leading up to it. And so proud of my team and how they executed this year. The next one that comes up is Mother's Day. And that's a big one. It could be for corporate, it could be personal or anything, but Mother's Day is special. It's meaningful. Moms are special. And I'll put the PSA out there, celebrate your mom every day. Don't wait for a specific holiday to
Absolutely.
Do that.
Absolutely.
That's really important. It's never too early to celebrate mom, but that's going to be one of the next big ones that are out there. And again, why is that? Moms, more than anything, they want to spend time with you.
Yeah.
It's not about much else. They want their kids together. They want to see somebody who they haven't seen in a while. They want to talk to a distant relative. Moms want to spend time together.
That is so true. We're talking this morning with Mark Beal with Instead of Flowers is your go-to source for homemade chef-inspired meals to send to anyone on any occasion to show your appreciation, support, and love. Instead of Flowers reinvents how we all show how we care. We replace the fleeting beauty of flowers with restaurant-quality meals you can share with family or friends to create a unique experience. Mark, I want to shift to operational challenges. So how do operational challenges impact Instead of Flowers? And what efforts do you put to overcoming those challenges?
I think there's two main categories that come to mind. The first is just the production and logistics of getting high quality food to people's doorstep. And you want it to be presentable, of course, it needs to be delicious. There's a lot that goes into it. And that's a big step from if you're in a restaurant and walking it from the kitchen right to the table. We have this whole supply chain and chain of custody that happens to get from our kitchen to your dinner table. And so there's a lot that goes into it, from the types of containers that we have to use. They've got to be functional. They've got to obviously present. There's a whole checklist of things. And whether that's the containers, the temperature controls, the actual delivery, all of those are operational things that go into the experience for someone. And we're all about providing a great experience. And then on that note, another operational thing is making sure that we're keeping both of our customers happy. Our customer on the front end is the gift giver, the one buying and giving a gift. But our second customer is that gift recipient, the one who's actually going to receive the meal and enjoy it. And our operational challenges a lot of times are making sure that we are communicating the right message at the right time for each of those people. It might not sound like much, but if you give a gift, you ultimately want to know, did they get it? Did they enjoy it? Close that loop for the gift giver.
Sure.
Keep them happy and wanting to give again. Same thing on the recipient side. Maybe you're new to Instead of Flowers. You don't know how this works, or you've never had it before. How do we communicate to you to get you ultimately to the dinner table? So operationally, that presents a lot of different touch points. We've got to get the timing down. We've got to get the messaging down. And honestly, it's something we're continuously iterating on and I think improving on based on customer feedback, what works well, or if we hear a question, especially a repeated question, we know, okay, we've got to work on solving that, because that's what people need to know.
Such an excellent point. So there's got to be a listener out there today who is wanting to either give a meal, or someone who's thinking about someone else that they want to send a meal to. What's the best way for them to get in touch with Instead of Flowers?
The best way is insteadofflowers.com. That's where you can go on, place an order in just a couple of minutes with just a few clicks. Of course, our customer support team is always there over the phone as well to assist with ordering. We do everything from an individual order to hundreds included in one, hundreds of meals in one order. So we can really handle it all. We've got a fantastic team, but insteadofflowers.com is where you can see it all.
Great. Not only as a gift recipient, but also as a gift giver, I've had just absolutely top shelf experience with Instead of Flowers. You've got a great idea. The whole idea of fellowship around the table is incredibly meaningful to so many of us. So keep up the great work that you're doing, Mark. Thanks for coming on Profit Sense today.
Thanks so much, Bill. It's my pleasure.
I'm going to shift over to Peter Fazer. Peter, you and I go way back to Trust Company and SunTrust. We probably have a lot of banking stories that we could both tell, but share a little bit about your journey as a banker. How has banking changed maybe in the last 10 or 15 years?
Boy, how long is the show, Bill? We could certainly talk about it for a long time. Let me first just say, Bill, how excited I am to be joining the Profitability Coach and be working with you again. It was so wonderful working with you as a teammate back at our days at Trust Company. And you're right, banking has changed dramatically since then. I am from Atlanta, went to Washington and Lee University, and after getting out of that, went on the training program at Trust Company. And the training program back then, when banks did such things, was to make sure that bankers were consultative, that they were part of the sphere of influence along with CPAs and accountants. And it was much more of an industry, from my opinion, that worked with small businesses to grow them into bigger businesses, make them more profitable, help them with the balance sheet management, increases in efficiency in the income statement. And the issue that I see in banking today, having been in this industry now for close to 30 years, is that we've really shifted away from being consultants, and coaches is probably a better word to use. I think that lenders today are often incentivized on doing that, making loans. And if you're incentivizing your lenders to make loans, they have to bank companies that are already bankable, because they can't really spend a lot of their downtime coaching and bringing people to profitability. And that is what really fascinated me about what you started at the Profitability Coach, by filling that gap. I'll give you a little bit more background on me. So after I went through the training program at Trust Company, I ran a middle markets portfolio with companies in the Southeast, Loved it. It was a great opportunity for me to get exposed to a lot of different industries, understand how businesses work from the ground up, and really get behind those financial statements to figure out, okay, the numbers that we see on the balance sheet and the income statement, those tell a story that reflects all the decisions that company is making every day that they're open for business. I found that when I first got into banking, I thought it would be a great place to learn about other industries, to see where I wanted to go work. And what I found pretty quickly is that I liked banking. I liked being that coach and I liked teaching, and I found I had a passion for that. I shifted from middle market banking into running several groups to work with other financial institutions. So think of banking other banks, which sounds like a strange concept, but you have 4,600 banks in the country. Not all of them are big. They're not all Truist. They're not all Bank of America or Wells Fargo. And they need to create efficiencies so they can help their clients. And so I did that for about 16 years. And along the way, what I began to do when the larger banks stopped training programs for their bankers is I began to teach. And I teach till this day. I've done it for about 20 years, where I work with bankers at smaller institutions. And I teach them how to analyze financial statements, how to do exactly what we talked about a moment ago. Get behind the numbers. What is the story that the client is telling you? And how can you, being part of that sphere of influence, help them make better decisions about what they're doing, not only on the balance sheet income statement, but with their cash flow?
Yeah, I found that, if I remember correctly, I think it was Warren Buffett that said, accounting is the language of business, and many business owners struggle with speaking the language, let alone being fluent. Often an entrepreneur didn't take accounting courses in college. And when you own the business, there's no on-the-job training. So there's really a void in the marketplace where business owners don't have a place to go to be coached in becoming fluent in accounting and finance. And you mentioned earlier teaching, there might even be an example, whether it was working with another bank or working with another client, that you had the opportunity to teach them some accounting. Is there maybe a story that might come to mind?
I think it's interesting. There's a lot of stories that come to mind, but I think to your point, when you're a small business owner and you're running your business day to day, it's often hard to think about how do you get yourself to a better place financially. So keeping the doors open, keeping your clients happy is a full-time job in and of itself.
Sure.
And if you can't afford to have your own CFO, then it is incumbent upon you to wear two hats, and you're already wearing multiple hats on top of that.
Right.
Having worked with bankers, a great story that I have is I teach a 10-week class, which is everything soup to nuts about how to work yourself through the balance sheet, the income statement, and how they interact to generate cash or to use cash. Oftentimes, I'll end my 10 weeks with requesting, hey, now go back to your shop and let's go find one or two clients where you really want to dive in and let's see where you can help them. Where can you be a coach? And what I find is interesting is that oftentimes I will get calls from bankers months after the class has ended to where they're saying, hey, look, I'm going through this cash flow analysis and I'm not quite sure, you know, what this number tells me. And what I teach is that the number is only that. It's a number. It's the result of a fraction. And what your job then is to figure out, okay, what's driving that fraction? And how can you help the business owner get behind the number themselves so they can make maybe different decisions?
Sure. I've also, I think, found that there are so many business owners that are busy working in their business. They don't really spend time working on their business. And so talking about those ratios and what numbers mean, they are more than numbers on a page. They do tell a story.
The other thing that's important is when you're running your business day to day, it's often hard to look out 3, 5, 10 years and then ultimately think about your exit strategy. For most business owners, there is either going to be an ultimate liquidity event or it's going to be the handing the reins over to the next generation, whether that's part of your family, whether that's part of the existing management team. But there needs to be some attention focused pretty far out to understand how can I grow this to a place where it has an equitable value and an enterprise value as an ongoing concern without me, who started it. That's often hard for business owners to think about.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We're talking this morning with Peter Fazer, who has over 25 years of commercial and corporate and investment banking experience. His passion has always been helping his clients to get to a better place financially, whether they're a small business or a publicly traded company. As he mentioned, he began his banking career with Trust Company Bank in Atlanta, managing a portfolio of middle market clients. Peter, I want to talk about maybe as you decided to leave banking and corporate America and become an entrepreneur, you could have done just about anything, but maybe talk a little bit about your passion of helping business owners become better financial managers.
One of the opportunities I had presented to me when I was working with Truist Securities was to originate a line of business. And that line of business was focused on how do you help corporate and investment banking clients increase their bottom line by paying attention to the human capital component. How do you help your employees be more engaged? How do you make them be more present? And how do you help with retention? The amazing numbers around retention rates are that if people feel that they are undervalued, and very much to Mark's earlier comments around feeling connected to that company, they are more apt to leave you to go somewhere else. And so our focus at the time when I started this line of business was to make sure that companies understood, hey, look, the biggest line item expense you're most likely going to have is your personnel expense. How do you make sure that you're not turning that unnecessarily? Because it is a 3x multiple when you have to replace somebody.
Yeah.
So what I learned in that process in doing that for 7 years was there were so many other components, whether they were a small company, whether mid-size, large cap, that business owners, CEOs, executive teams just weren't recognizing. And when you and I began to talk, I thought, boy, that is something that intrigues me, that I'm passionate about, that I would love to share that on a broader scale and a much more meaningful level with some folks that are on the smaller end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. I found taking a page out of Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, you got to get the right people and get them in the right seats. Typically, the right people are the people that share the owner's core values and core focus, and getting them in the right seats is more, do they like the job they're doing? Do they get it? Do they want it? And you make an excellent point about wanting to be sure the people aspect of the business is so important. You did mention exit planning in an earlier comment, and I want to shift our discussion to that. The baby boomer generation is retiring in droves. A lot of those are closely held business owners. Talk a little bit about how you feel you can add value to someone who might be thinking about exiting a business.
Yeah, sure. I think, look, the first challenge you always run into is valuation expectations. Having a good understanding of what recent trades are in a specific industry is vital to understanding what your company is worth. I think a tendency of business owners is because they live it day to day and because they're emotionally attached to it is to always think that it is worth X. Like anything, it is worth what someone is willing to pay for it. And especially in businesses, it is worth whether you're running a discounted cash flow analysis or you're running an enterprise value based on an EBITDA number. Where I think I can be most helpful is I've spent a lot of time in my career helping clients get to the point where they are ready to sell, but also on the flip side, running due diligence. I worked for 2 years for an investment bank out of Birmingham, Alabama, and I led the due diligence team because they wanted to expand their line of business. They wanted to bring a company into the fold, into the holding company. And getting into the weeds of what you look for, the interviews that you're conducting, the questions you're asking, and getting into the war room, if you will, of what are the financials really telling you about the institution that wants to be acquired? And when you're on the flip side, I think having worked both sides of the trade, I think I can be very instrumental in helping business owners think through, okay, what is that going to look like for me?
Yeah, such an excellent point. Let me reciprocate. I am delighted to have you as part of the profitability coaching team. You bring a wealth of knowledge and experience, and so I'm equally excited to have you on board. For our listening audience out there, what is the best way for them to get in touch with you? Is it by phone? Is it by email? Share some information if someone wants to reach out to you.
It's probably both, phone or email. So peter@theprofitabilitycoach.net. And then my cell phone, which is 770-331-1263. Happy to have conversations.
Yeah. Peter, thanks so much for coming on the show. Excited about you being on the team. And there's a huge need out there to help business owners. So,
thank you, Bill.
Yeah. Going to switch now and spend some time with Andrew Henry, one of my favorite people and favorite topics. Andrew joined Childs & Company in 2014 after beginning his career at Ernst & Young. He's not only a CPA, but also a certified financial planner. So, Andrew, welcome. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Bill, and thanks, Mark, and obviously Peter for sharing your thoughts. Huge fan of Instead of Flowers, Mark. We've had it many times and big fan, and welcome, Peter, to Profitability Coach.
Andrew, research says that about 2 in 10 owners actually have an exit plan in writing. It's probably something that they procrastinate. They feel like they have other fish to fry or other priorities. Why should a business owner start planning early for an exit?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bill. And obviously, Peter touched a little bit on the exit planning, and we as financial advisors work with many business owners. The bottom line here, no pun intended, is to maximize value. They are looking, very rarely will a business owner wake up one day and say, hey, I'm going to sell my business in the next month or two or 6 months and do it successfully. So they need time to prepare to address certain issues like staffing. If they have a key relationship upon an exit that would cause revenue to drop. Are business owners key people in sales or operations? How do you hire and develop a management team or a leadership team to make sure that your business has the value that you desire to get from it? And so by planning for these things several years out, you'll be able to put another just great value on your business in hopes of selling it at the value that you'd like to.
So I think you already touched on maybe one of the common mistakes during the planning process, that being starting too late. But I'm sure in your experience, you've seen some other common mistakes that business owners make during the planning process. What are some of those?
Yeah, again, we touched on how early you need to start. And a lot of guys will say, hey, look, I'm going to sell it in 5 to 10 years. But 5 to 10 years comes a lot quicker than they think. I saw something the other day. It's like, hey, put it in days. Put it in the amount of days that you need until you're going to sell it. And maybe that'll help you get on board quicker in order to start planning. So again, the planning process needs to start as quickly as possible. Secondly, not considering all their options. There's several different options out there to come to a liquidity event. And each one is unique to the person and to the industry. Do you sell to a private equity or third party? Do you sell to a strategic buyer? Do you sell to or transition to your family, or do you go IPO? There's a lot of different ways that you can do it that is structured from a value standpoint. And if you don't consider all of them, you might not get exactly what you want, your desired outcome.
Yeah. The other thing I've noticed recently, a couple of the clients that I have talked to start out wanting to sell to a third party, but then all of a sudden do kind of a pivot and talk about selling to the management team. I don't know if you have any thoughts, pros or cons. I know both are legitimate ways, but what are maybe some of the pluses and minuses of those two examples?
Yeah, completely depends on the situation and the person. Obviously, the future of the business is different if you hand it off to people that you're familiar with versus those in a third party who may have different goals that want to turn it in the next 3 to 5 years. So how the business is managed going forward could be a different outcome for you. Obviously, there is a valuation difference there as well. And again, it's all dependent upon what people will purchase it for from a third party standpoint. Whereas if you hand over to a management team, maybe you could structure it as seller financing.
Sure.
And there's obviously different tax strategies that come into play there. But it does come down to the ultimate, the dollars. So there could be a difference there as well.
Sure. We're talking today with Andrew Henry, who's a partner with Childs Company. He focuses on the firm's strategic growth through business development and client satisfaction. Andrew is also responsible for leading the financial planning and Business Retirement Plan Advisory Practice at Child's Company. And so I want to direct it to the business owner's personal financial plan. I know Child's Company really does a lot of work with business owners. The business value definitely plays into the business owner's personal financial plan, but talk a little bit about how does this impact the business owner's personal financial plan?
Sure. I'll give you a little bit of background on our company and our firm. My business partner, Matt Child, started the firm after about a 20-year career as a CFO and owner himself in a retail chain that they grew from a mom and pop to selling to a private equity firm. And so he started the business to work with business owners that weren't thinking about their personal finance in a holistic way. They, you know, typically would have advisors that would just focus on their brokerage accounts. And so he opened the practice to really look at it from a holistic point of view. And so for us, obviously, if you're going to sell your business, this is probably the largest monetary transaction that you're going to have in your life. I think I read an article somewhere that was published last year that said 80 to 90% of business owners have a majority of their net worth tied up in their business, which if you think about, that's completely intuitive. They're putting everything back in to try to grow it as much as they can. And it's their baby. They're wanting it to grow.
Yeah.
And so obviously having such a large liquidity event now changes the topic of, hey, what does life look like after the business? Not only from a monetary standpoint, but from a personal standpoint. Do you go and start another business or invest in another business? And then obviously for cash flow, how does the liquidity event impact you?
Yeah, I've also looked at the personal financial statement of a business owner who has a majority of their value tied up in that closely held business. They're horribly undiversified. And so I'm sure that there are some things that maybe you share with them to help them diversify their wealth as well.
Yeah, there's several areas that we talk to business owners about, one of which being asset diversification. Once you do have this liquidity event, what do you want to do? And I talked on it a little bit earlier, but do you want to buy real estate? Do you want to invest in another company? Obviously, there is a brokerage account, and I think there's a time and place for that. But there's a lot of other things that business owners specifically bring a lot of complexity to the table.
So talk a little bit about what are a few strategies that business owners should think about or think through while planning for an exit?
Sure. Yeah. You obviously have the time between now and exit and then the time post exit. Asset diversification is one of the things we talk about. Tax strategies, again, not a practicing CPA, but I still hold on to it. So know enough to be dangerous, but you really need to bring in an expert in the tax realm in order to cross all the T's and dot all the I's in order to structure your company in a way that's going to maximize your value after tax, between now and exit, after exit, or really at exit. There's a couple strategies that you could also look into from a charitable giving standpoint and estate planning. You should bring in an attorney. Having a team around you is one thing, Bill, that I would also say that it could be a mistake that most business owners would make is not having everybody in place. You talked about people on the bus. If you're going to go through an exit, you need to have the right advisors on a bus, being M&A attorney, either a brokerage or an investment banker, obviously a CPA, and then what we think is a private wealth guy as well.
Yeah, so critical. Talking today with Andrew Henry with Child's Company. Child's Company is a boutique private wealth management practice. They leverage their 35 plus years of business experience and financial expertise to provide comprehensive financial planning and investment strategies to business owners, but also to executives, retirees, and young professionals. Andrew, talk a little bit about what are a few common options. You talked about charitable giving. So what are a few common options for charitably inclined owners when they sell a business?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a couple options there. And again, this is where a team of people, myself included, an attorney and certainly a CPA would come in handy. Donor Advised Fund is a very popular option that allows you to take a bigger charitable deduction in the year that you have the liquidity event or make a lot of money. There's also a private foundation, charitable remainder trust. It's just very important if you are charitably inclined to plan for it. What is it? You can't decide day of closing how it's all going to work out. Maybe you even gift some shares prior to exit into a trust. And so you wouldn't have to pay taxes on that. I would recommend having everybody at the table when making that decision.
Yeah. Valuable information today, Andrew. Thank you so much for coming on. If someone wants to reach out and get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, go find our website, childscompany.com, C-H-I-L-D-S, company.com, and our information's all on there.
Great. Andrew, thanks so much for coming on Profit Sense today.
Thanks, Bill.
There are four best ways to develop leaders in your organization. Many people believe that leaders are born, not made. They believe there are natural leaders that just seem to have some genetic makeup that turn them into leaders. I respectfully disagree. I believe leaders have a growth mindset, which drives them to be lifelong learners and become leaders based on their growth and development. There are four ways that leaders develop. The first is a highly capable individual. These individuals make significant contributions to their team or organization through their talent, knowledge, skills, and work ethic. They're experts in their field and can consistently produce high-quality results. Second, a contributing team member. These people are team players who excel at working with others to achieve common goals. They can build relationships, motivate others, resolve conflict, delegate effectively, and empower their team members. Third is a competent manager. These individuals can organize and direct their team members to achieve specific goals. They can set clear expectations, provide feedback, and develop their team members' skills. The fourth is an effective leader. These people can inspire and motivate others to achieve high performance. They are able to create a clear vision for the future, communicate that vision effectively, and build a strong culture of trust and accountability. So where do you see yourself on this spectrum? And what would it take to go from a competent manager to an effective leader? If you want to keep up with the latest in pro business news, follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram at The Profitability Coach. If you want to listen to past or future ProfitSense episodes, you can find us on ProfitSenseRadio.com. This is ProfitSense with Bill McDermott signing off. Make it a great day.